Welcome into the Rundown on this Thursday morning here in Music City, USA. Ryan Porth here in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Walked into the office today with a little extra pep in my step. I don't know why. I can't even think of why I would have an extra pep in my step today, Elijah.
Really? Nothing's starting today? Nothing's beginning that we've waited for a couple months? Nothing like that?
Nothing coming to mind.
Huh. I don't think I can't think of anything.
Oh, wait.
Either.
It's opening day.
Wait, they
in
settled
Major
that?
League Baseball.
They settled that whole thing?
We are finally getting opening day in Major League Baseball. Tonight, doubleheader on ESPN with the Yankees and Nationals, followed by the Giants and Dodgers. Made sure I threw in the Giants and Dodgers just for our buddy Marquise Munson, who has felt slighted all week long that everybody's been talking about the Yankees-Nationals game, but not Giants-Dodgers. Now, Yankees-Nationals is the only game you can hear tonight on ESPN 102.5, the game starting at 6. There is no ESPN radio doubleheader, but there is a doubleheader on TV. So we are getting Major League Baseball back tonight. Thank the heavens that we've got baseball coming back tonight. And two games this evening, and then the rest of Major League Baseball getting at it tomorrow. My Cincinnati Reds against the Detroit Tigers. Our Cincinnati Reds, I should say.
That's right. This is an all Cincinnati Reds power hour this morning.
Yeah, we're going to do is talk Cincinnati Reds. Not really.
It's Cincinnati Reds preview.
No, not really. But at 9:15, I do have my five bold predictions for the Major League Baseball season for 2020. So some are out there. Some may not be so bold, but the five bold predictions for 2020 coming up at 9:15. Richard Justice, longtime baseball writer, at 9:30. Lots of baseball today. We'll also catch up with Willie Donick for a Predators training camp report coming up at 9:45, as Darren Donick and Chase will be live once again from training camp coming up at 10 o'clock. But yesterday, our own, we claim Mookie Betts here in Nashville. Nashville's own Mookie Betts, pride of John Overton High School in South Nashville, signed a 12-year, $365 million contract extension to stay with the LA Dodgers. Completely out of the blue. When it started surfacing yesterday morning that Mookie Betts was about to sign this extension, I know I was surprised. I was fully expecting Mookie to get to free agency. But here's the thing. When there's uncertainty around this season and the offseason and the future of baseball beyond 2021 with a potential labor dispute, getting in now and getting your contract now is a smart thing to do if you're Mookie Betts, especially when you're getting paid $365 million.
Yeah, that is a lot of money.
And over the course of the next 13 years, because he obviously has signed for this season, he's going to earn a prorated amount of $10 million this year. So he is going to earn $375 million wearing Dodger blue over the next 13 years. Now, Mike Golic on Golic and Wingo this morning did the math. Did you hear this, Elijah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, he did the math all right.
He
it's
did the math.
It's pretty astonishing when you put it down, I guess, to this level right here.
Every single day when Mookie Betts wakes up, he's going to be earning just over $79,000 per day. Not per game. Certainly not per season. $79,000 per day. Every time Mookie Betts wakes up, another $79,000 in his bank account.
Nice problem to have there. That's a pretty sweet deal.
So I put out on the game Twitter at 102.5 the game. What would be the first thing you would buy if you signed a $365 million contract? How would you answer that question, Elijah?
Man, oh, that's tough. Definitely might gotta do a house upgrade, some new living quarters.
All right.
Like my situation now, but a new house by myself would be pretty nice.
Chris on Twitter says he would bring Tim Hortons to Nashville. Tim Hortons would be awesome in Nashville. So would Skyline Chili. That would be maybe the first thing I would do is bring Skyline Chili to Music City. Somebody saying a Playboy Mansion. Another person saying a Toyota Tundra.
Nice. Subtle.
Rusty on Twitter saying majority ownership of the Nashville Predators. So responses all across the board. You can interact at 102.5 the game. What would be the first thing you would buy if you signed a $365 million contract? So congratulations to Mookie Betts. Very well earned. this was the type of payday he was looking for out of free agency, but he gets it before free agency with the LA Dodgers. And to get a $365 million contract in today's landscape with sports being such an uncertainty, that's huge for Mookie Betts and his family. Here at the station, we know Mookie Betts' family pretty well, with us, you know, sponsoring his bowling event every winter during the off season. And Mookie's a great guy, and this is very well earned. And congrats to the Betts family. Another thing I thought of when that news hit yesterday, especially in the afternoon, once we started learning the money, how do you feel like Ronald Acuña feels about this? Because Ronald Acuña, not this past offseason, but the offseason prior, signed an 8-year, $100 million contract, which looks like an absolute steal for the Atlanta Braves. An absolute steal.
Mm-hmm. Eight years,
$100 million for Acuña. If Acuña had just waited a couple more years, he probably would have been signing a similar contract to what Mookie Betts just signed.
The market would definitely demand for a similar contract like that, because obviously they produce, you know, at similar rates, and Acuña's a little younger. My thing with Acuña is I'd be so mad at my agent. I mean, like, yeah, you get $100 million over the course of 8 years, which is no bad deal at all. I don't know if anyone would ever complain about getting $100 million in 8 years. But given what your potential worth is and your earning window, 8 years like will surpass maybe the prime of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So this is his big earning opportunity, and this is where having an elite agent really, you know, does help. And in baseball, that's why the Scott Boris's of the world are as wealthy as they are. It's because they get a little extra more for their clients.
Now, $100 million, nothing to bat an eye at,
oh, yeah.
Obviously. But when Acuña sees Mike Trout make over $400 million, when he sees Mookie Betts sign a $365 million extension, I can't help but wonder, Acuña is sitting back looking at all this saying, if I had just waited another couple years, I could have signed a contract very similar to that one. So that's one thought that that came to mind for me yesterday when learning of those numbers for Mookie Betts. Another thing that came to mind for Mookie Betts and the LA Dodgers is the fact that the LA Dodgers are going to be incredible for years to come. They've got Cody Bellinger. They've got Mookie Betts. They've got two of the top five players in baseball right now between Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger. I would throw Ronald Acuña and Mike Trout into that mix as well as two of the other top five players in baseball. But you throw in Mookie Betts to Cody Bellinger and the star pitcher that they have, Walker Buehler, out of Vanderbilt, and all of the young talent that they still have up and coming. Still haven't seen the potential of Gavin Lux. Still haven't seen the potential of Dustin May. And that team is absolutely loaded for years to come. I have to think the 2020 decade of the LA Dodgers might look similar to the New York Yankees of the 1990s.
It could. They still have that big hump in the World Series to get over, but I mean, obviously, time is a luxury for them, and it also helps too that they're the second richest team in baseball. So if there's ever a high profile free agent, they just have the luxury to go get it. I mean, I know they paid Mookie Betts all the money in the world, but the Los Angeles Dodgers, as a franchise, like the New York Yankees, have all the money in the world. It will never be a problem for a franchise like that. So not only are they set up for the future, they can make runs, you know, every offseason for a high profile free agent, only to make that better in case, you know, someone like a Gavin Lux disappoints.
Right. So, man, the LA Dodgers are going to be so good for so long, and maybe they're going to have to win World Series with a different manager. Not a big fan of Dave Roberts in the playoffs, especially after what happened against the Nationals last year, where he continued to run Joe Kelly out there.
Yeah.
In game five and extra innings, and Joe Kelly blew it.
I bet, yeah, that one haunts him. That one's gonna stick with him. And if say that happens again this year, say you get another early exit to a wild card team, I mean, that's an honest, fair discussion that you're going to have, because other teams in similar positions that they were in have made similar moves and obviously paid bigger dividends.
Right. And another headline in baseball, Mookie Betts, obviously the biggest one. Another headline in baseball that was emerging last evening was a tweet from John Heyman, longtime baseball insider, saying that Major League Baseball is now considering expanding the postseason for 2020 from 10 to 16 teams. Why are we waiting until 24 hours before first pitch of opening day to then change the course of the 2020 Major League Baseball season? That is so Major League Baseball in 2020 if they were to come out today and say, oh, wait, it's actually going to be a 16-team playoff instead of 10 teams.
I would just take that as a prank. I mean, I can't even take it seriously at this point. Like, there's no way that you wait. That's some grade A level procrastination. And as someone who is a procrastination expert, I don't think I could pull off something like that within 24 hours of actually starting your season.
I mean, I just shook my head at that. It's like, if you were going to expand the postseason, why didn't you make that a part of the deal a month ago?
Yeah, didn't we just like have a whole months long sparring match over like certain terms like season length, postseason length? I mean, we just had this whole drama for months about this to the point where we weren't sure if we were even having a season, and now they're just willing to kind of slide that in 24 hours beforehand. That's sloppy.
It really is. Baseball has not been buttoned up through all this process in terms of the negotiations between the owners and the players. Who knows if that's going to happen in the next 8 hours, 7 hours, whatever it is?
I mean, I don't know if they could have waited any later. The clock's ticking. And
I mean,
it's
6 p.m.
Fast.
6 p.m. Yankees Nationals.
It's like we start in the season here, yeah, today.
Exactly. So we'll see if that comes to fruition before first pitch today between the Yankees and the Nationals. But coming up next, I've got my five bold predictions for the 2020 Major League Baseball season. We'll get to that coming up next. Don't forget Richard Justice at the bottom of the hour right here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown. Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Talking a lot of baseball this morning on opening day across Major League Baseball. Tonight will be the first real action of live sports from the four major leagues between the National Hockey League, Major League Baseball, NFL, the NBA. Major League Baseball tonight, Yankees Nationals at 6, and then Giants and Dodgers, second game of the doubleheader on ESPN. So opening day in baseball, and all across the interwebs, you are going to see the 2020 MLB predictions from ESPN.com, from CBS, from Fox, from everywhere. The Athletic. You are going to see the 2020 and all the predictions from all the staff writers from every site that covers baseball. So wanted to give my five bold predictions for the 2020 season. Some of these might be more bold than others, but here it goes. Let's start with number one.
Number one.
My first bold prediction for this 2020 MLB season is that baseball will find a way to finish this season and postseason. I am predicting there will be some team forfeits at some point because I don't think you're going to get around some sort of outbreak within a team before the end of the season. If a team is on a road trip, I don't know if you can get the 30-man, you know, taxi squad from your city to the city that you're playing at in time for a game. So I'm going to predict that there will be a handful of team forfeits at some point, but baseball is going to do everything in its power to finish this season if they're going to start it, and they are starting it tonight. And the last thing they want to do, just like any league, they don't want to have to parachute out of this regular season and the playoffs. So my first bold prediction for the 2020 season is that they are actually going to finish the 2020 season and the postseason.
Number two.
My second bold prediction for 2020 for Major League Baseball. Four division winners from 2019 will not win their division in 2020. Four. I'm saying the Yankees, the Astros, the Braves, and the Cardinals will not win their divisions in 2020. I'll go with the Rays in the AL East. I'll go with the A's in the AL West. I'll go with Philadelphia in the NL East. And I have to go with the Cincinnati Reds in the National League Central. the other division winners from 2019 to win their division in 2020, saying the Minnesota Twins in the AL Central. Think they are by far the best team in the AL Central this season, and they have a pretty easy schedule because they get to beat up on the rest of the AL Central. And then the Dodgers, for obvious reasons, in the National League West. I do think the Yankees and the Braves will be wild cards this season. And there is a team or two that you did not hear me say on my number two bold prediction that leads into number three.
Number three.
My number three bold prediction for the 2020 Major League Baseball season is that the Houston Astros and the Washington Nationals, the two teams that played in the World Series last year, will both miss the playoffs in 2020. And this is under the assumption that only 10 teams are going to make the playoffs. If only 10 teams make the playoffs in Major League Baseball in 2020, the Houston Astros and the Washington Nationals will both miss the playoffs this year. Look, in a 60-game season, it's inevitable that a good team or two will end up missing the playoffs because everything's going to be so jumbled in the standings. All it takes is one or two breaks to not go your way if you're a good team, and you might be on the outside looking in, especially because as of 9:18 a.m. Central Time, there are only going to be 10 teams making the playoffs. When you look at the Houston Astros, they've got an older pitching staff now. They lost Garrett Cole, the best pitcher in the game. They still and don't forget, they still have a bullseye on their back from the sign-stealing scandal. So everyone facing the Houston Astros this year are going to be motivated to take them down. And I just don't love the vibe around the Houston Astros. And then when you look at the Washington Nationals, not to say that the playoff run was luck, but they caught fire at the right time in about mid-July. And a big reason for that was the 1-2 punch in the offensive lineup of Anthony Rendon and Juan Soto. And as you may know, Anthony Rendon is no longer a Washington National, signed with the LA Angels in the offseason. And the NL East might be the most competitive division in Major League Baseball in 2020. Not only do you have the Nats, you've got the Braves. The Phillies have a pretty good vibe to them going into 2020. They've made some shrewd additions here in the last couple years. You also have the New York Mets, who have a pretty good pitching staff, although Marcus Stroman, it does sound like he's out for a while. Could miss the entire season. But four really good, solid teams in the NL East. I think the Nationals are going to be on the outside looking in along with the Houston Astros for the 2020 playoffs.
Number four.
My number four bold prediction for Major League Baseball in 2020 is that neither the Dodgers nor the Yankees are going to win the World Series. I will take the field for 2020. The Dodgers and the Yankees are co-favorites to win the World Series, betting odds of 7-2. The Dodgers have a loaded lineup, but I don't love the depth of their pitching staff. I don't love their bullpen. When you look at the Yankees, look, they are extremely talented, but they've just been missing something here in the last few years. We'll see if they can put it all together in 2020, but I will take the field for the World Series in 2020, especially with how random we're all expecting this Major League Baseball season to be. So I will take the field and say neither the Dodgers nor the Yankees will win the World Series in 2020.
Number five.
All right, this might be the goofiest bold prediction for 2020. All right, and I think Elijah Campbell is going to appreciate this bold prediction. You ready for this one?
I have an inkling of what it might be or what it might entail, but fire away.
I would be surprised if you had an inkling on this one. And no, I did not share these with you before I went 1 through 5. A closer is going to win the Cy Young in either the AL or the NL this season. I would say this might be the boldest prediction, but hear me out on this. It's going to be hard for starting pitchers to separate themselves in a Cy Young race in a 60-game season, especially when you're starting the season with really only 5 to 6 inning starts for most starting pitchers. So the bullpens are going to play a huge role in a lot of team success over the course of this 60-game season. And I think managers are also going to be a lot more apt, especially if they are contending, when every win is going to mean something, to ride the back end of their bullpen to victories, almost like they do in the playoffs. Maybe not every single day like you see in the playoffs, but I think it's going to be pretty close. And there's probably going to be a closer or two that is just dominant, just downright dominant, whether it's Kirby Yates with the Padres, whether it's Josh Hader with the Brewers, whether it's Roldis Chapman with the Yankees once he gets over COVID-19. I feel like there's going to be a closer out there that is so good and so vital to someone's success in close ball games that a closer is going to end up winning a Cy Young, especially because a lot of these games probably going to be high scoring to start. You're starting opening day in the middle of July, not in early April. So the temperature, the ball is going to be flying a lot more to start a season than normal. And a lot of pitchers have been coming out here in the last week or so saying that they feel like they're behind the hitters in preparation for the 2020 season. So I will go with a closer winning a Cy Young as my number five bold prediction.
I did not see that coming. No, that was not my my inkling. I was.
What was your inkling?
That the Reds were winning the World Series. That was your World Series prediction, because you said it was going to be an outlier, because it very well could be. If there's any year that a team that isn't expected to win the World Series wins the World Series, it would certainly happen within the realm of a shortened season, like a 100-game, like shortened like by 100-game regular season. Like, a lot of fluky stuff can happen. I'm not saying the Reds World Series be fluky. It would be a little different, but that's kind of where I thought you were going over there.
Well, that would come across as so homerish.
It would.
Anyone who knows me knows that I am so glass half full on the Cincinnati Reds, even if they're
at all times
30 games out in August. I'm still hopeful that they can run the table and make it to the playoffs.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to go that far, but I do think that team is going to win the division.
They are very, very good. But the go back to the reliever winning the Cy Young. Actually, that hasn't happened since, like, what? Was that Eric Gagne was the last one to do that?
I believe that's so.
Yeah.
And like, '03, '04.
Yeah. So it's been like 15, 16 years.
Right. And he had, like, what, 70 saves?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
It was insane. Yeah, something absolutely insane. Obviously, nothing he could ever recreate ever again. Never did. But, yeah, that's within the realm of possibility this year. It's going to be a wacky year, so why not?
It is going to be a wacky year. But I really think managers, especially if they're contenders, are going to be riding the back end of that bullpen just to make it to the playoffs, especially if there's only 10 teams making it. These division races are going to be so nip and tuck. I mean, if you look at 538's baseball predictions with their metrics, just look at the NL Central alone. They have the Cubs, the Reds, the Brewers, and the Cardinals all ending up with either 32 or 31 wins. Whew. Like, every game, especially down the stretch, is going to feel like the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing that the 60-game season is going to give us, is that feel of, I guess, a shortened intensity for a lot of those games down the stretch.
So even if a closer only has 30 to 35 innings, I mean, what if he ends up with 20 to 25 saves?
Yeah, and saves, yeah, that's almost half of your season is a save. So, yeah, I mean, that could definitely happen, especially with someone like Josh Hader, who just, like, posts ridiculously high strikeout rates. I mean, shoot, Josh Hader was, like, in the conversation a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't going to win it, but he was, like, in the conversation. So there is already, I guess, among Cy Young voters that this heightened importance of the closer, or even, like, just a relief pitcher. I mean, especially these games down the stretch, that could be what makes or breaks you, and that could be what, like, takes the Brewers to the playoffs, because they obviously don't have a very good, like, starting rotation.
But, right.
And if their rotation does stumble, I think Hader's probably, if it's going to be anybody, I think it might be Josh Hader, just because he's the team's best pitcher. And if the Brewers do end up winning the division by five games or so and are one of the best teams in the NL, I mean, you could obviously say that he's one of the more valuable players on that team. So it's not out of the stretch of imagination.
Yeah. So we'll see. I know Jeff Passan on ESPN.com this morning wrote, or maybe it was yesterday, wrote that he does not think a reliever is going to win a Cy Young, that he thinks that's a dumb prediction because they might only throw 30 innings.
They are probably the 30 of the most important innings of the season, though, possibly.
I mean, if it's a starting pitcher, they're only going to win, what, 8-9 games tops?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Your best one will.
So, I mean, isn't it as hard to believe that you're going to award a Cy Young winner with only 8 or 9 wins this season as it is that a relief pitcher would only win a Cy Young with 30 innings? So I really think if there was ever a year for a closer to win a Cy Young, it is this wacky 2020 Major League Baseball season. All right, there you go. My 5 bold predictions for the 2020 season. Coming up next, we will get Richard Justice's take on Mookie Betts' contract and whether or not he would go with the Dodgers, Yankees, or the field in 2020. That is all coming up next here on The Rundown. I'm Ryan Porth. He is Elijah Campbell behind the glass. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in to The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, is it good to hear that music once again. It is opening day in baseball. Ryan Porth, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Thursday morning. As a reminder, Yankees-Nationals tonight. Coverage starts at 6 right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And joining us to talk about opening day and baseball as a whole is Richard Justice of MLB.com. Richard, thank you so much for joining us here this morning. Do we have Richard?
Yes.
All right. Hey, Richard, thank you so much for joining us here this morning. Before we get to some of the top storylines for baseball in 2020, obviously big news in these neck of the woods yesterday is Nashville's own Mookie Betts getting the 12-year, $365 million contract to stay with the LA Dodgers long term. What was kind of your first impression of that contract and Mookie Betts when that news broke yesterday?
My first impression was that the Dodgers had won 7 straight NL West championships and what they wanted, but they hadn't won a World Series. And they looked at changing the roster, and they decided the only way we're going to get better is to get a impact player, a big-time impact player, not just shuffle the deck a little bit, but get a difference maker. And really, Mookie Betts is – there aren't many guys, and there may not be any that can be mentioned in the same conversation as Mike Trout, but Mookie is one of those guys. He is a difference maker, and Andrew Friedman of the Dodgers had been very smart in conserving his prospects and resources, and when it was time to strike, he struck. They got a great, great player, and a guy that's going to be a cornerstone out there in a Dodgers uniform for a long time. It's not a great day to be a Red Sox fan.
Well, I was just going to bring up the fact that the Dodgers didn't have to give up a lot in that trade to get both Mookie Betts and David Price. Obviously, David Price's contract, a big reason for that. But do you feel like Red Sox fans are going to be haunted by that trade for many years?
Yeah, but I don't know about the return on the trade. I can never figure out prospects. It takes a while to get all that straight. It's just, you know, you don't get that many chances to get a player of this caliber. And it's easy for me to spend other teams' monies. I don't know the inside of the Red Sox financial books. They decided they were not going to be able to sign him, and so they traded him. And the Dodgers just said, this is a guy we're going to build around for a long time to come. They have a great farm system. The Dodgers, on opening day, are one of the best teams I've seen in a long, long time.
Do you feel like this decade of the L.A. Dodgers, the 2020s, could resemble something of the 1990 New York Yankees?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, they have the best executive, best general manager in the game, Andrew Friedman. And their farm system, if you were going to handicap the NL Rookie of the Year voting, Dodgers could be first and second. Dustin May, the pitcher, Gavin Lux, the second baseman, who's going to start the season in the minors but won't be there long. I mean, they're just a fantastic team. I mean, they're going to run out to the mound today, a future Hall of Famer in Clayton Kershaw. I mean, they have impact guys all over the field. They're so good that their number 3 starter, David Price, as you said, he opted out, and all they have is a prospect named Dustin May who has a 91 mile an hour cutter. I mean, that's how great the guy is. So they're in a good spot. That doesn't mean they're going to win if the playoffs are expanded. You know, it's going to be a wild run in October, but they are in the best spot today.
So when you have your outlook on the 2020 season, speaking of the Dodgers, you know, they're co-betting favorites with the New York Yankees at 7-2 odds to win the World Series as opening day begins today. So would you take the Dodgers, the Yankees, or the field for the 2020 World Series?
No, I would take the field because if we have a 16-team playoff, you just don't know what can happen. Are the Dodgers the best team? They're the best team. But Tampa Bay could win. You know, Houston could win. And then you could get into the postseason and some of the one of these teams with all this young pitching, like Atlanta or San Diego even, and get hot. I mean, that's the beauty of the thing is that, you know, Cincinnati is a team capable of winning the World Series. So it's a different playing field, but the Dodgers are really, really good.
As a Reds fan, I love hearing you say that the Cincinnati Reds could win the 2020 World Series. But you mentioned the playoffs potentially expanding to 16. What chances do you give of that happening?
Oh, I would say 90%. I mean, it just makes so much sense in that it's a weird season. Let's do it differently. It makes sense to have more playoffs. We love playoff baseball. It just has a different feel to it. And particularly in this season, wherein you had so many teams, like the Reds, working so hard to get better, like the Blue Jays, like the Rangers. And there were 20 teams that saw a reasonable path to the postseason. So this expands their reach in terms of getting there. And it means you're going to have – I mean, we're starting the season basically – in late July, and you're going to have the vibe of the season changes in August and September, and we're going to have that from the beginning. It's a cliche to say it's a sprint, but it's a sprint, and you can't have a slow start. And the thing is, in a shorter season, it levels the playing field for teams like maybe the White Sox with all that young talent get off to a good start. Maybe Oakland with all the young pitching, they don't have to manage the workload so carefully now. Just give them 12 starts. And let's go and get out of the way. It's really a fascinating dynamic we have in a season like this for all we had to go through to get to this point.
Richard Justice of MLB.com with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Richard, you mentioned the uniqueness of the 60-game season, and when everything was agreed upon about a month ago, I think a lot of longtime baseball fans were like, "Man, this just isn't going to feel real. It's not going to feel right." Do you feel like we're going to look back on this season that is going to start tonight and say that was one of the most fun baseball seasons we've ever witnessed?
Yeah, I hope so. And I also think that the team that wins it, is that team going to feel legitimate? When you look back at all they went through, do you gear up for spring training? You start to get to the sprint, the stretch run of spring training. It's shut down. You have no place to work out. You're living with the fear of the coronavirus that we all have in this country, the uncertainty of coming back, and then to have it like this, and the challenge of staying healthy and all of that goes into it, and then a wild October. I mean, it's going to be as special as ever. Maybe I told you last time that I was around the Dolphins 1 year in a strike-shortened year, and somebody had the nerve to ask Don Shula, "You know, coach, this is a Astros season," and he gave him that glare and said, "Yeah, if it's an Astros season, the Dolphins intend to be the champions of the Astros season." So you play what's in front of you, and you celebrate when it's over. And I just think the celebration this year, just the relief and that we got through it, everything will be tremendous.
When you look at the Houston Astros, obviously they were going to be a huge storyline back in March and April when the real opening day was supposed to start for the 2020 season, and how fans would treat them in opposing ballparks, how opposing teams would treat them because of the sign-stealing scandal. How do you feel like teams are going to treat the Houston Astros in the AL West and the NL West when the Astros come to their ballpark?
The Astros caught a break because they were going to get their butts booed off every time they stuck their head out of the dugout. And we can say, and I saw it for myself, that they were getting worn down by it even in spring training. You know, we talk about athletes being mentally tough, but how hard is it to play when you know the whole world thinks your reputation is gone, your good name is gone, and the whole world wants you to fail? That's hard to do. And the world has changed since then. And with everything that's gone on in the country, the fact that there's not going to be fans to boo, at least at the beginning, that's a break for the Astros, you know. I mean, well, and also in a 60-game season, I just don't know how much, you know, they're going to play the Dodgers. I don't know how much you can worry about settling scores if you feel you have a score to settle. And for the Astros, no team is going to be more motivated at the trade deadline. They have some real questions about their team. Their seventh inning reliever, Joe Smith, is gone. Their closer, Roberto Osuna, is gone. Their rookie of the year, DH, Yordan Alvarez, has not been around. So, I don't know. Their offense might be the best in baseball. The front three of the rotation with McCullers, Greinke, and Verlander is going to be great. But there are questions about the team. And they've gone through a shock to the system with the manager, who is as important, A.J. Hinch, as any single person. He was responsible for the success. You have George Springer headed toward free agency. All those dynamics. They're still good. They're still probably the best team in the American League West. Are they head and shoulders better than Oakland, the Angels, the Rangers? Probably, but you still have to go do it.
Richard Justice of MLB.com has been our guest here this morning on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Richard, thank you so much, and enjoy the uniqueness of this this 2020 season. All right, that was Richard Justice here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Interesting stuff there from Richard, saying that a 90% chance that there is going to be an expanded postseason from 10 to 16 teams. Look, it feels natural for a 2020 season to have a different postseason than we've ever seen before. Don't know why they're waiting until opening day to settle that. But, I mean, I'm not going to say no to that.
For this year, and he made a good point, too, saying that it's a wacky year. Why not have a little bit of a wackier postseason? And it would also make up for, I guess, that element of flukiness, you know, like a team like the Astros or the Yankees that are just uber talented and maybe has like two bad weeks where they stumble and the Rays get hot. I mean, not the biggest Yankee guy in the world, but like any baseball fan can understand that that's one of the most loaded rosters in baseball. And it would be a shame to have them miss the playoffs because they had a rough first 60 games of the season or 2 weeks that really kept them out of it. Why not add a little bit of flair to it? I'm cool with it, but like I'm just not cool doing it the day of the season starting. I mean, like as a little bit of preparation mentally before that.
Also loved him hearing, or loved him saying, the Cincinnati Reds could be one of those teams to win the World Series.
That might be the first time in my lifetime I've gotten to hear those words and then being said seriously by a sober individual.
Well, well played. 2012, they were certainly good enough to do so. And then they just peed down their pants against the San Francisco Giants. Coming up next, we will check in with Willie Donick. We'll shift gears from Major League Baseball to the Nashville Predators. They had a scrimmage yesterday. They will scrimmage again today. We will get a Preds training camp update from Willie Donick live from Bridgestone Arena. Coming up next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown. Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Yesterday, the Nashville Predators held a scrimmage at Bridgestone Arena. First of two scrimmages. Back-to-back days, they will scrimmage again today. The gold team beat the white team yesterday 4-1. So the Nashville Predators won a game at Bridgestone Arena for the first time since March 5th, if you want to look at it that way. Joining us now from Bridgestone Arena is Willie Donick. Willie, how we doing this morning?
Doing great. All quiet here at the arena. The ice crew is here. The pucks are all in the pyramid shape, ready for the scrimmage. So I know all the guys behind the scenes have been here for a while now, getting everything ready. So getting set for some more game-like conditions here. It's looking more and more like real hockey as they continue to ratchet up to the type of intensity they're going to need come August 2nd.
No Morse code sounds this morning either. So that's a
not yet.
Well,
not
yeah,
yet.
Yep, but that is a positive so far this morning. But Willie, Team Gold beating Team White 4-1 yesterday. Kyle Turris scoring two goals for Team Gold, and Kyle Turris he's a name that hasn't been talked about a lot throughout this entire quarantine period. We've spent a lot of time talking about the Jofa line, talking about the goaltending situation, and Kyle Turris on that second line alongside Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund. I mean, John Hines spoke yesterday about how Kyle Turris has always been a goal scorer in his career, trying to get that kind of production out of him yet again, out of this quarantine, out of this training camp as they prepare for the Arizona Coyotes. Have you seen another level to Kyle Turris's game compared to what you had been seeing from Kyle Turris you know, pre-COVID and, you know, whether it was games or practices?
It's hard to say. I do think his confidence overall was restored in the weeks after John Hines took over. Even when he wasn't scoring a lot of goals, you could tell he just felt more comfortable with his game. He felt like he had a bigger role with the team. He wasn't, you know, trying to play just to get in the lineup and, you know, prove to everybody, you know, why he should be in the lineup. It's a better mental place to be in. I think he's picked up where he left off there. When you score a couple goals in a scrimmage, it can't do anything but help your confidence and your feeling about the line that you're on. I just think sort of validates the idea that they're trying to push forward here with Kyle Turris on the second line with Duchesne and Granlund. So I think that was a step forward. Just like any scrimmage, though, it's like, you know, what does it mean? Does it mean the offense was great or the defense wasn't great in that? So it could be one or the other or both, but that's up to the coaches to be able to really fine-tune that with their evaluation.
And Kyle Turris on that line is playing wing. He's a natural centerman. So we haven't seen a ton of Kyle Turris on the wing. I know they've been trying it a little bit through the 2019-20 regular season, as you know, they really have three centers that could center a first or second line between Johansson, Duchesne, and Kyle Turris. So I'll be really interested to see, especially starting with the exhibition game next week against the Dallas Stars, if Kyle Turris continues to play on that wing.
It's something that they really have not been able to, if for one reason or another, stay with. Anytime they've tried it, it has not been a long-term thing. Like, for example, when they've played him at a wing for a game or two, it just hasn't stuck. It hasn't stuck for a long time. They're hoping this is the time that it does happen, because everything falls into place. If he can fit at that wing, everybody's really in the right seat everywhere else in the lineup. If he needs to play center, then it moves guys around and it makes it more balanced, which has its upside, but I don't think it's where the Predators are at their best. So I think that's the idea behind it. And so let's hope it works. We're not going to know anything until August the 2nd, but I do think you see some positive signs.
The big storyline on Twitter last night from the scrimmage was the fact that Pekka-Rinne gave up four goals and UC Saros only gave up one goal. And obviously we don't want to overreact to just one practice or scrimmage. We all remember back in training camp for the Tennessee Titans when Marcus Mariota went like 4 weeks without throwing a pick, and it became a big deal on Twitter. And we all thought Marcus Mariota was heading for the Hall of Fame because of that. Say that tongue in cheek. But when you look at Saros and Rinne and what occurred yesterday in the scrimmage, was there anything that stood out to either of their games?
I definitely think Saros played very, very well. I think, you know, if you look at the shots that were going up, Saros' team, the gold team, actually was outshot by a pretty wide margin. So he was getting more action towards the net. They worked a lot of special teams, so there was a lot of power play chances. Saros, if there was an area where his numbers didn't look very good, and this was the case with the whole team because the penalty kill was a big weakness for the Predators during the season. But he made some really good saves in special teams. As we test out the goal horn here.
All right.
But I thought he played very well. Now, evaluating Pekka giving up the four goals, I do think there's a lot that goes into, you know, what happens when a goal is scored. Is it on the goalie, et cetera? I think it's probably way too simplistic to say that, you know, because Saros played better yesterday, that he's got a leg up. Today could be a completely different story, and you don't know exactly what the coaching staff is evaluating when they're trying to make their decision.
And it could just as easily be Saros giving up four goals today in the scrimmage and Pekka-Rinne giving up one goal, and then all of a sudden we're right back to a 50-50 conundrum for a lot of people.
No question, and I think you hit on a good reference, right? The frame of reference, the perfect analogy, is the preseason in football, right? When we were keeping stats in the practice of Marcus Mariota or you know, pick a player, the backup quarterback, you know, how many catches a guy made at wide receiver. What does that really mean? Well, you know, it's probably worth putting out there, but it doesn't mean as much as it seems on that particular day, right? It's just one piece of a bigger evaluation.
So it's pretty uncommon, I would think, that scrimmages would happen within a training camp back-to-back days. Do you feel like John Hines is trying to prepare this team for the back-to-back situation that they will face for games 2 and 3 against the Arizona Coyotes in that qualifying round?
Oh, I think for sure. And I think, too, the start time. You know, the start time here is the start time out there. They are trying to get the guys used to a game day routine of what time you wake up. What are you going to eat before the game? How do you prepare yourself for that start time of 12:30 Central Time, which is, you know, 1:30 out there? I'm sorry, 1:30 Central Time. I think they're trying to get that body clock ready to go for those matinees.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know,
back-to-back is part of it, right? Bouncing back. Your body's got to respond at the highest level playing the night before. And so this is another part of it.
Yep, and I'll be interested to see all the reports coming from camp today from you guys up in the radio booth watching during the Darren Donick and Chase show live from Bridgestone Arena, and also the reporters down in the lower bowl of whether or not any of these guys get gassed. You know, that was a big thing on day one. Pecorine mentioned after practice that after about the first 10 or 15 minutes, he started feeling gassed down there on the ice. Back-to-back days of scrimmages for the first time in a long time. We'll be interested to watch that as well.
Well, I thought it was noteworthy that there were 5 goals scored in the first period and none scored in the second period. And then there really wasn't a third period per se. It was all special teams, and they swapped up the units a lot. So the third period wasn't really a true third period. So I don't think either goalie got to play a full 60 minutes the way they're going to have to in a game situation. So they're still in the process, I think, of ratcheting up. They've still got some time here. They're going to do some things once they get to Edmonton, I'm sure, in addition to just playing the game against the Stars. That's the real dress rehearsal. You know, you want to feel like after that game you're fully ready. But, yeah, I agree with you. I do think you're still acclimating to those game-type situations, the speed of the game, the quick reaction time that you've got to have. And so the only way to do it is to play and try to create those, you know, create that environment as best that you can.
Last night on Preds Insiders, I was joined by Hal Gill, and one thing that we talked about was the defense pair of Matias Ekholm and Dante Fabra. We all know what we'll see out of Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis, or at least we have a pretty good picture of what we're going to see out of that duo. And we all know Dante Fabro had some struggles in his first full NHL season. But Hal and I brought up the point last night of the fact that this was essentially an offseason for these guys. And a lot of times for young defensemen, there's a pretty big jump from year one to year two or year two to year three for their maturation process and just being used to the speed of the game in the National Hockey League. And for Dante Fabro, I'm kind of pinpointing him on defense as someone who could break out within this postseason.
Well, even if he doesn't break out, I think it's so important for him to play at the top of his game. I think we've seen when he is on his game, he is really, really good. It's just capturing that night in and night out. And I'm sure, because Hal has said this many times before in conversation, in those first 100 to 150 games of your NHL career, you're just going to have some times where you get exploited. Because you're just not as experienced as you're going to be. You haven't been through all of the little things that can happen. And that's how you get better. But Fabro, in a very short period of time, has got a playoff series under his belt. He had valuable playing time during the regular season. Then, as you said, he's got even more months now to sit back, reflect, grow, mature a little bit more. So hopefully he's on his A game. He's going to have a lot of responsibility for sure. There were times where he was slid back down to the third pair during the season when he was having those little hiccups, and they would take some of the responsibility away from him and use more of a veteran player like a Yannick Weber in that role. So if he stays on that second pair with Matias Ekholm, I think that's a really good sign.
Willie Donick is the Preds TV voice and co-host of Darren Donick and Chase. You'll be able to hear him and Darren McFarland coming up in just a few minutes live from Bridgestone Arena. Willie, thank you as always, and we look forward to day two of scrimmages over there at Bridgestone Arena.
All right, Ryan, looking forward to it.
All right, that's Willie Donick live from Bridgestone Arena. And coming up next, it is Darren Donick and Chase coming up from Bridgestone Arena. For Elijah Campbell, I'm Ryan Poore. Thank you for listening to The Rundown this morning right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.